Today is March 22nd, 2023, and I am Kara Vandry of the Ashland City Library interviewing Bill Lang, resident of Ashland, about his memories of the Vietnam War era. We are in the Ashland Library itself. Bill, when were you born, please?
October 16th, 1948.
And we are doing this interview through Humanities Kansas in conjunction with the National Endowment for the Arts Big Read Project. Bill, you served in the Vietnam, but what branch of service?
United States Air Force.
What was your rank when you left?
When I left the Air Force, I was an E-5 Staff Sergeant.
And where did you serve?
Where? Of course, Lackland for basic training.
Lackland where?
Lackland Air Force Base, Texas.
Okay.
For basic training.
Mm-hmm.
Then Chanute Air Force Base, Rantoul, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
For technical school on airframe repair. And that was my AFSC. I was airframe repair specialist. Okay. Worked on airplanes. And from there I went to Tucson, Arizona. And from there I went to Cameron Bay, Vietnam, and from there I went to Taiwan, and from there I went back to Texas Kelly Air Force Base, and then I got an early out to attend college. So
okay.
That's my Air Force.
That was a lot of moving around.
A lot of moving around, and I was married at the time, so.
Okay.
I was married in November and went in March. So,
were you drafted or did you enlist?
I enlisted.
Okay, when?
When? March 1969.
Okay. Where were you living when this was going on?
In Emporia, Kansas, and I was working as a machinist. And, just gotten married, and Georgianne was finishing up college.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were working. Okay, why did you join?
Why did I join? My dad served in the Army Air Corps in mm-hmm. World War II and went to the Philippines. And I just didn't have a lot of direction and wanted some opportunities to see the world and serve my country, and I guess.
Okay. You got to see a lot of the world.
I did.
And why did you pick the Air Force?
Because Dad was in the Army Air Corps. That's right when the Air Force was being established. And
mm-hmm.
Now they have the Space Force, and our son-in-law is going to be a part of that.
It's a family tradition.
Pretty much.
Okay. Do you recall what your first days in the service were like?
In basic training, it was kind of a humbling experience. I was already not a radical. I was pretty passive person and did what I was told. I grew up that way, and I had a good work ethic, and I was clean and neat, so I wasn't ripped apart by the TI, technical instructor, and we just as a group, had to do calisthenics in the morning, go to breakfast and have lunch and do whatever was required.
How long was boot camp?
6 weeks.
Okay. So you didn't have as miserable a time as some folks who had a lot to learn when they got there.
Mm.
Were you running 5 miles before breakfast?
We had to do calisthenics and mm-hmm. all that before breakfast and get up like at probably 4:30 and make our bunks and mm-hmm. get out and get in. I didn't have any problem with that. I was in shape and just...
and just did it.
Just did it. And now they say 80% of the people are not even qualified to go into the military because of their...
physical condition?
Physical condition, pretty much. Which is...
even
it wasn't that way when I was a young man and we had more work ethic and we didn't sit around do this and I'm showing
your thumbs on a game pad.
Yeah.
And even people just getting out of high school where you have to go to gym class are in.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And when I went into the Air Force, I weighed 138 pounds. So I was lean and mean.
Okay. And you were when you got out, too. Okay. Do you have any boot camp training experiences you would like to share?
My TI on one of the first days picked out a young man from Georgia, and he said, "Airman." Well, we didn't have, we were slick sleeves, you know, but he still called us airmen. And I forget his name, but he said, "Do you like pine trees, airman?" "Sir, yes, sir. I was born in Georgia." He said, "Well, you go over and hug that pine tree and don't you stop until I tell you." So signaled him out. It's just, you know, what they did to try to break you down. And he said, "Any of you airmen have college have been to college?" And a few of them raised their hand and they said, "Well, you college boys, you go police the area, pick up all the trash. You other guys, watch them and learn something, because they're..." And of course, they shaved your head off, you know, you were... After you got your hair cut, other guys in the barracks would call you a ping, 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 ping. Stuff like that.
Okay.
Anything to demoralize. And that's the way it was. But you did what they told you to do, and you said, "Sir," before you said anything else to them.
Mm-hmm.
And my Sergeant Blevins was a three-striper, just a buck sergeant. But we all looked up to him because we didn't have anything. Okay. Then Sergeant Hannapaw was like a staff sergeant. No, he was higher ranked. He was like a master sergeant.
Okay.
So he was over Blevins, then Blevins was over
you.
Our group, yeah.
Okay.
So that's pretty much basic training. I was glad to get out and get into my assignment, and I'm glad I was chosen and picked. Well, we took a proficiency type test,
mm-hmm.
and off of that, they tried to fit us in where we could help them, and I did well in airframe repair, and that's where they sent me to school.
So. Was that because you were already a machinist?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So after boot camp, where did you go for airframe repair school?
I went to Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, Illinois, and mm-hmm. that base is no longer an active base. They've closed that base, so...
Okay.
But during Vietnam, they put a lot of guys through there on schooling.
Do you remember what it was like when you got to Rantoul? Did you fly? Did they put you on a bus?
Oh, I traveled. I was married and had to get off-base housing. Mm-hmm. And so Georgianne got to go with me to Rantoul, okay. Illinois. And we rented a little apartment from a sergeant who only rented to military and stayed in that apartment while I went to school. And he knew we would take care of it, his property. And anyway, that's, and it was short term, but not a lot of money per month to live there.
Do you remember how much money you were making?
In the Air Force?
As a married person.
$230-some a month.
You had to
squeeze.
Not
a lot of money.
Okay. And Georgianne was working then, so you
She was babysitting there just to make a few dollars.
Okay. All right. Then where did you go after Rantoul?
Went to Tucson, Arizona. Mm-hmm. First, I got to leave, and my grandma had passed away, so I kind of left school early but tested out and went to Emporia, Kansas for grandma's funeral. Mm-hmm. And we had a little place to stay there while I was there. And then went to Tucson, Arizona, and spent about a year there.
Learning your trade?
Davis-Monthan, I'm sorry.
Learning your trade at Tucson?
Yeah, I was actually working on airplanes, if you look at it.
Okay.
Yeah, right there, F-4, that's the airplanes I worked on at Davis-Monthan, a fighter jet. And it was a training base to train the pilots. It's Davis-Monthan.
Does that mean there were lots of planes needing repair? If it was a training base?
Pretty much, yeah. They put them through the motions as pilots.
Okay. So both pilots and mechanics were, not a mechanic, excuse me, you were an airframe specialist.
Yeah, airframe repair specialist and worked alongside the machinist and the other jet engine mechanics. And so
but this
we
is
all worked in the same hangars, and when they bring a airplane into the phase docks, inspectors would go over that airplane and write out all the discrepancies, if they found a loose rivet, if they found a crack, if they found anything that had to do with airframe. We would get a list and the tail number off the aircraft and go to the hangar with our tools and work on the airplane until we completed those discrepancies, and then those would have to be signed off by another inspection to make sure that everything was
kosher.
Copasaw.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I love my work, and I was good. I was a good troop.
Because you're meticulous?
Pretty much, yeah. And they could count on me to go out and do the job. Mm-hmm. Other guys, they'd send with me, and they'd watch me, and I'd do the work, because it was that kind of a deal. I liked to do it, and I was good at it. And I tried to teach them. Some guys just didn't have the ability.
Or the interest.
We're all different.
Okay. Did you see any combat at all yourself as a mechanic?
Combat, no.
Yeah, okay. So you were putting things back together for other people.
I was putting things back together. In Vietnam, I had augmentee duty, and that's where you would go out and guard the... I was stationed at Cameron Bay. It was a hospital base.
Okay.
And at night, you wouldn't want that base infiltrated with any enemies, so they'd post guards all around the base in different locations and give you a little C rations, which was a little box that had canned yucky stuff in it.
To eat. Okay.
So I'd have a lot of augmentee duty. And
is this after you put in a full day? I'm assuming you were repairing things.
No. If planes got shot up pretty bad, they would fly them out of Vietnam because they didn't have tooling and facilities and stuff to really work on them. But we would do what they call scab patches, and we had aluminum tape for cracks, stop drill the whole crack with a stop drill and put the tape on it, and enough to get it to the Philippines. And that's one of the bases where they would really go through and do...
So you did running repairs to be able to fly it farther on
and,
to get
and
real...
Taiwan, too, and that's where I was stationed after Vietnam, so... We had maintenance depot there, and I worked on a C-130 aircraft there. So, and that's what I was stationed in Vietnam at to work on C-130s. The hospital base had C-141 aircraft, which had a hatch that would come down in the back. And you could roll in
equipment.
Yeah, and wounded.
Personnel. How big is a plane like that?
It's large. It's a big one. It's a transport, a C-141 transport. But they made them into what they called hospital ships, where they had seating and also stretchers. That they carry guys. And I got to fly on one of those missions. It's a medevac mission. We flew from Cameron Bay up to the DMZ, the militarized zone, picking up wounded guys and bringing them back to the hospital base. And I got to go on one of those because they asked me if I'd like to. And I said, sure, I'd love to. So I did that.
How long would that take?
It was about a day flying up and back, and not a long time.
So you were part of keeping everything going.
In Vietnam, it was kind of a boring job because we couldn't really do a lot with the aircraft, but we could sit around and... play chess. Larry King and I would play chess and do things like that. And we had different USO club where you could go in and play ping pong and pool and all that sort of thing. And then we had library, and we also had a hobby shop where you could go in and just, I did lapidary work. I don't know if you're familiar with the dop sticks and the stones and forming and polishing. I did that for a hobby.
You still do some of that.
I do some of that.
Yes. Okay.
Well, I don't have the equipment to do lapidary, but I do different stuff.
So they got you started on some of your current hobbies.
Yes.
Okay. Were you awarded any medals or citations while you were in the service?
Just my campaign ribbon. And
because you served.
Yeah, but I wasn't injured and didn't.
Yeah.
So.
Is there anything about life in the service that you would like the current generation to know about? Was there anything about how you lived and what you did while you were there?
Well, it's a commitment. You're committed not only to serve your country, but your fellow man. And if somebody's down or hurt or anything like that, you want to be available. And before we went to Vietnam, they told us you will carry handkerchiefs in your pockets, in your fatigues, and you don't use your handkerchiefs if you have to make a tourniquet on somebody else. You keep your handkerchiefs, you use his, and that way if you get hurt, you've got handkerchiefs. Okay. That's one thing. Augmente duty, you never knew. There were sandpans out there.
What is a sandpan?
I can show you where Cameron Bay was, where I was stationed.
And the sandpan is the boat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Little Vietnamese fishermen and stuff, but you never knew what they had or who they had. So.
And what they looked like. Okay.
Right. Cameron Bay is right here. Cameron Bay. And that was a hospital base. And there's about 20 other hospitals in Vietnam.
If you will lend me this, I'll scan it.
This book is going on loan to you.
Okay, thank you. And let me
You're
mark
welcome.
That page. Okay, page
okay.
182.
Mm-hmm. And this one you can keep.
Okay.
And you can keep that CD.
Thank you.
I always envied the pilots, though, getting in those jet planes. I looked up to them.
They were kind
saluted
of...
Saluted them when they flew off the
weren't
flight
they the
line.
Rock stars? I'm sorry, weren't they the rock stars of the...
Yeah, of the Air Force,
yeah.
Pretty much. One thing about when you worked on an airplane in the flight line or in the phase docks... You had to account for every tool that you took out and fasteners. In other words, you didn't leave stuff laying around that could... These jet fighters had jettison seats that would have rockets under them and fire the seat out of the airplane in case they were hit and going down.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't leave anything that would get under there and get crushed or damage any of that. So it's called an egress system was the...
Okay.
So everything had to be accounted for, and you just had to be a sharp troop and do things right. And they expected it, and then they'd have times where they would call out a few guys and have you pick up FOD, foreign objects damaging, FOD,
mm-hmm.
off of the flight line. And that'd be like any bolt, nut, stick, rock, anything, because you don't want that sucked up into those jet engines. So we policed the flight lines and had trucks take us out, and then we had low packs and high packs to run our air tools and drill motors and rivet guns, that sort of thing.
They were air driven?
Air driven, yes.
Okay.
Not electrical. They were air.
Because you can carry
compressed
an air.
Yeah,
you could carry an air pig with you, or an air a container of compressed air. You could carry with you.
No, we had a. It was on a. Like a little wagon that you would.
Mm-hmm.
Have, but then the high packs they. drive those out and unhook them and fire them up. But they had high packs for even starting the engines on the planes.
Okay.
They would hook those up, and that's how they start the engines on those.
So any bit of debris could actually ruin an engine if it were sucked in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. You got all these blades in there in those jet engines.
Yes.
And all different sizes and shapes to move that air, heat the air, and the air expands, and that gives you the propulsion. Very interesting. A lot of power. JP4 fuel. Mm-hmm. Another thing, every time I had to work on an airplane, that airplane had to be grounded, and there was ways to ground them, and you had to ground them to make sure that no static or spark could...
Oh, an electrical ground. Okay.
Yeah. Grounds for a static and that sort of thing. It was a, yeah. Because you didn't want any of that to catch that jet fuel on fire. We were very safe.
But I'm going to assume that the hangar where you were working on these things had to be built so that you could work on them there. Was everything in place when you got there?
You mean
there?
In Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
In Vietnam, everything was in place when I got there. I was at the end of the war, and Cam Ranh Bay was being closed, and that's why they sent me to Taiwan to finish out my one-year overseas assignment. Mm-hmm. So they was closing that base down, and we had barracks and sandbags all around. And
okay.
That's what we slept in, and I had a M16 in my locker with the 10 round magazines of, you know, the 223 ammunition. And that was because I was on augmentee duty, my sergeant, instead of going to the armory every day, would just let me keep mine in my...
And if you hadn't been a sergeant, you would have had to have gone and checked out a weapon and all that stuff.
Yeah, I had a good first sergeant. He and I were buddies, and mm-hmm. so he had a lot of faith in me and liked me and took me under his wing.
Did that make your life a little easier
then? Yes. Okay. Yeah, I got along with everybody. I just... did what I was told.
You keep mentioning that doing what you're told part. That seems to be a very important part of military life.
It is. Yeah, there's a rank.
Mm-hmm.
And you respect officers if you're enlisted. Mm-hmm. You salute them because they've earned their commission.
Mm-hmm.
And we're non-commissioned. We're non-con, and they're commissioned officers. But they had their own clubs and everything, too.
To which you were not invited.
We were not invited. They had better food and service and entertainment, whatever. But it's the way it was.
What was your food like?
The food in Vietnam? It was good.
The non-commissioned person... describe what the C ration is.
A C ration is a, you get a little, maybe 2-3 cans in a little square box and a little, call them bennies, benefits,
mm-hmm.
a little opener, P-38, I think they called it, to open those cans.
It was like a little key that you spun.
Yes. Yeah, you carried them on a keychain, but they gave them with every
meal.
Every box of bennies, you got the opener. And 4 cigarettes in a little cigarette package, which you could trade for whatever you want. So, some guys, you know, really had to have their smokes. Anyway, you'd open this can, it'd be like a cold spaghetti and stuff like this. It was not good. Some guys, if they were on a truck or something, could heat those cans up by putting them on the manifold.
Did that make them a little more palatable?
Yes, a lot more palatable. But you'd also have this other little can that had like a dried out cake. Like no icing or anything like that. Just a piece of dried out biscuit type cake.
And if you're hungry, you eat it.
Yeah. Okay. But it wasn't good, but got by.
Okay. Did you have plenty of supplies where you worked, or did you ever have to wait for parts to repair things?
I never did. So where I was and what I did, didn't have to wait for parts, but we just put Band-Aids on these planes and flew them out of there.
Right.
If they were flyable. And most of them were.
Sort of.
C-130 was a workhorse. Mm-hmm. In fact, it had that trap door on the back that would open up where you could drive things in. But they also had a 10,000-pound cheeseburger bomb on a pulley and skid, and a drone chute would come out, open up, and that bomb had a 6-foot detonator on it and would drop down with this parachute and blow up and make a helicopter landing for the jungles and the areas.
Why did you call it a cheeseburger bomb?
Because it was 10,000 pounds. That's just a nickname they gave it.
Okay. And its whole job was to clear.
It was a big bomb.
And its whole job was to clear an area.
Yeah. And they couldn't fly that in those little jet planes. This was a big cargo plane bomb.
Okay. 6 foot.
So.
What were your stressors? What were your... Did you feel pressure or stress while you were there? Was anybody yelling at you to do something?
Not really. I didn't feel stressed or pressured. Of course, in the augmentee duty, they gave us a radio for emergency when they post us out. The canine guys would do their rounds and come by with their dogs, and we'd sit and talk and things like that. So.
Is that how you entertained yourself then?
Yeah.
Visiting. And you said you had pool and ping pong.
Yes. And hobby shops and things like that. And we played a lot of chess, Larry King and I. He was a lot better than me. But anyway, pastime.
Right.
And he taught me quite a bit.
Okay. Okay, I've heard that Bob Hope and entertainers...
I didn't get to see any of that entertainment.
Well.
I think it was more in Saigon and places like that than Cameron Bay, the hospital base. But.
So how many people would have been on that base in Cameron Bay?
Boy, I don't know.
Okay. But Saigon would have been much larger.
Oh, man.
So many more people.
A lot larger.
Okay.
Well, there was maybe 300 at Cameron Bay. A lot of nurses, doctors. And
so it was smaller.
And cooks and... I was there for airframe repair. Mm-hmm. But didn't do a lot of it.
but you were there.
But I don't regret having served and being there, because that's where they put me and that's where they wanted me. So that's what I did.
Did you get to go on leave?